Good morning, everybody. And a special welcome to our dads this morning. My dad's no longer with us, so I am very thankful, though, that he made the decision to follow Christ and he's looking down on us from heaven. This morning's verses are taken from Nehemiah chapter 4, verses 1 to 10. When Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became angry and was greatly incensed. He ridiculed the Jews, and in the presence of his associates and the army of Samaria, he said, "What are those feeble Jews doing? Will they restore the wall? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they finish in a day? Can they bring the stones back to life from those heaps of rubble, burned as they are?" Tobiah the Ammonite, who was at his side, said, "What are they building? Even a fox climbing up on it would break down their wall of stones." "Hear us, O our God, for we are despised. Turn their insults back on their own heads. Give them over as plunder in a land of captivity. Do not cover up their guilt or blot out their sins from your sight, for they have thrown insults in the face of the builders." So we rebuilt the wall till all of it reached half its height, for the people worked with all their heart. But when Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites, and the people of Ashdod heard that the repairs to Jerusalem's walls had gone ahead and that the gaps were being closed, they were very angry. They all plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem and stir up trouble against it. But we prayed to our God and posted a guard day and night to meet this threat. Meanwhile, the people in Judah said, "The strength of the laborers is giving out, and there is much rubble that we cannot rebuild the wall."
Morning, everyone. Great to be back up here again, sharing with you again this morning. You know, as we've celebrated communion together, and we intentionally did it at the beginning of our service, reminds us of the very reasons for which Jesus came and the cost to him and what he went through to enable us to come into a right relationship with Jesus and to be restored in that relationship with God. And yet we're also reminded that throughout Jesus' ministry, and in the message that he brought, there are always those who opposed him. Usually, those who were the powerful and influential. Even immediately after his baptism, Satan tries to tempt him to abandon his mission. And when then that doesn't succeed, there are those who try to persecute and prevent Jesus from fulfilling his calling. And even one who was present there around that table in that upper room was one of those who opposed and betrayed him. But then Jesus repeatedly warned his disciples that they too would be persecuted, that they too would face opposition to their witnessing right from the onset of their ministry. He gives warnings in Matthew 5, 11 to 12, and in Luke 21 and 12. And even when Jesus was there in the upper room, there around a communion table, he says this to them. He says, "Remember what I told you, a servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will persecute you also. If they obeyed my teaching, they'll obey yours also. All this," he says, "I told you so that you will not fall away. They will put you out of the synagogue. In fact, the time is coming when anyone who kills you will think they're offering a service to God." You see, whenever God is at work, we can expect that the evil one will seek to undermine that work and to distract us from the task. He isn't going to leave it alone. However, before we look at both how Ezra and Nehemiah had to face opposition, Let me share a word of caution. You see, we as the Christian church in the West have been in a privileged place and position. Ever since the days of the Emperor Constantine in the fourth century. And too often the church and its representatives take a position of privilege, of entitlement, of arrogance, rather than a position of humility and servanthood, similar to Jesus. And it is that sense of superiority that many people in our community oppose. Not necessarily the gospel itself or the message of the kingdom, but often the way that we position ourselves of entitlement. And we need to listen. We need to learn from those who have different backgrounds and experiences for us to learn how we can best share the good news of Jesus instead of being judgmental. Whether they be the homeless, the addicted, the refugees, the indigenous, or whatever. We need to sit down and listen. Well, let's look at what happens here. What happens to the Jewish people as they seek to restore the temple as well as the walls of Jerusalem so that they themselves would be restored as the people of God? So we're going to look at Ezra first, and then we're going to look at briefly at the time of Ezra, and then we'll look at the time of Nehemiah. Ezra 3 ends on a high note. The people rise up, even though they are afraid, and they lay on the foundation of the temple, and the work is underway. And when you get going with God and you get moving forward in God's work, you want and hope that there will be a smooth sailing. But that's not always going to be the case, as it wasn't for them and it won't necessarily be for us. These people had sacrificed so much to get back to Jerusalem and to begin the work of building the temple. But instead, we're going to see the rise of opposition and resistance to the work that they were seeking to do on behalf of God. In verses 1 to 3, we see opposition, which may not seem like opposition at all. You see, there's a bunch of people in the land that come to Zerubbabel and the heads of the families asking to help build the temple because they are also seeking to worship the same God. Now, that all sounds really great, to have more help building the temple. But the response of Zerubbabel and Joshua and the heads of the family tell them that they're not to be part of this work. Why? Well, there are a couple of clues given us to the text to help us understand this response. You see, verse 1 says that these people are actually the enemies of Judah and Benjamin. And what these people are saying is not truthful. They're not really there to help. They're actually enemies. They say that they've been sacrificing to God ever since the time when the king of Assyria had brought these people here. Now, that seems to be a really positive attribute. But if you go back into the scriptures, back into Kings, the book of Kings, we see that's a totally false declaration. We need to see that there are things going on that appear to be the right thing, but as they get to know them and as they do know them, we find that there are actually enemies at work. And so the Apostle Paul, in a similar way, in Acts 20, says that it gives us warnings that amongst the flock there can be wolves. In Romans 16:17, Paul warns us to avoid those who cause divisions and create obstacles. Paul warns that people who were enemies of the cross of Christ in Philippians, and he warns the Thessalonians to keep away from and take note of those who do not walk according to how Paul instructed. The point is that just because someone says they want to join in the work doesn't mean they always should. We have to watch out for enemies who want to look like sheep, but who are actually wolves looking to harm and destroy the flock. And then in verses 4 to 5, these people were also experiencing opposition from doing the work through discouragement and fear. You see, their opponents did everything they could to frustrate the plans of the people to build the temple. And you can imagine what the discouragement would look like as they tried to thwart their plans to build. You can't do this. You don't have enough money, or you don't have enough resources. The work is too great. The work will be too hard. The work will never succeed. You heard those voices? You might as well quit while you're ahead. There are all kinds of things that people can hurl that can make us feel discouraged, so that the people become demoralized and they stop doing the work. See, when you plant seeds of doubt and fear into people, you watch their fervor wane. And that's what the surrounding people are doing here. And verse 5 tells us that this discouragement and this fear didn't go on for just a couple of days or for a few weeks. It continued until the reign of Darius, which means that the discouragement went on for 16 years. And the people will experience 16 years of other people making them afraid, making them discouraged, and frustrating their plans. And then the enemies use the government to put a stop to the work that they're doing. During two different reigns, these enemies used the government to threaten the people from doing the work. And the enemies were successful in bringing the government of the day against them. In verse 21, the king makes a decree to stop the work and that the city isn't to be rebuilt unless the king himself makes a decree to do so. And a law is given that the people must stop, that the government of Persia now stands in their way of completing the work. And then the final picture of opposition here in Israel 4 is that of forceful opposition. Verses 23, 24, we read that when these enemies got the letter back from the king, they did not just tell the workers to stop. The scriptures say they forcefully stopped them. The New English translation says they used armed force to stop them. Or one other translation reads that they stopped them by military force. So it came down to actually physically stopping the people from doing the work. And thus the work of God in Jerusalem stopped and remained stopped for the next 16 years. We'll come back to that. I want to look at what happened later in the days of Nehemiah, because the people of that day had a similar experience. Previously, we've seen how when Nehemiah heard about what was happening in Jerusalem, he was burdened. And he wept because his heart was broken. And it wasn't just about the ruins of the city wall. It was about the spiritual state of the people. Jerusalem was a special place. It was a place that was special to God in the Old Testament. And for the Israelites, this was their dwelling place of God, and yet the people didn't exhibit this in the way that they lived. And as Sam reminded us last week, today, God dwells in those who have come to faith in him and in the communities of faith to which he calls us to belong, church. And this is where God seeks to live in and amongst his people. And Nehemiah's heart had been broken over what he hears about Jerusalem, and the first thing he does is to go to God in prayer. And he gets on his knees and he literally risks his life before the king. And God honors that risk. And Nehemiah, in the following chapters, is provided with everything he needs to get the job done. Because he and us has a God of provision who doesn't call us to do something without providing the necessary resources. Too often we get caught up with making sure we all have the resources first. But if God calls us, we need to step out. Because God, if he calls us, he's going to give us the resources. And so in chapter 2, we see how Nehemiah arrives in Jerusalem. Now, of course, we remember this didn't happen overnight. There'd been 4 months of prayer. And then they had to move to Jerusalem, which was hundreds of kilometers away. So it was a long, hard journey. And Nehemiah comes in quietly. He gets a feel for what's happening in the city. He sees the discouragement. He sees the downtroddenness of the people. He sees the depression and the disgrace that they've been living in. And having surveyed the situation and seen the ruins for himself, he is a person that God wants to use as a catalyst to get the people moving. And so as Nehemiah starts this project, he comes to them and he tells them how God was with them, and he gets their eyes focused upon God. And with their eyes focused upon God, they're ready to tackle anything, no matter the problems or the challenges. Now you think about that for a moment. These people have been sitting there for 80 years. They've been back in the land for 80 years amongst the ruins and the rubble and the rocks. And they have looked at it all and they've said, we can't do anything about it because it's too hard. And then all of a sudden Nehemiah turns up and he says, well, let's do it. We can do it if our eyes are on God. He will equip us and enable us to do the task. And there's a real renewal that takes place amongst the people. And in chapter 3, we're told where the priests built, where the men of Jericho built, where the goldsmiths built, where the perfume makers built, where the families were, the Levites, the merchants, and so on. You know, I think this is where we find the secret why this wall was built so quickly. How they accomplished it the way they did in just 52 days. Because in chapter 3, we find everyone's on the wall. Everyone is involved in ministry. Everyone is doing it together. Here we find all the people have a ministry, all have a part to play in the rebuilding. It wasn't left to the leaders to do it. In fact, it wasn't even left to the professional bricklayers. Everyone was involved in ministry with a part to play. There's a sense of cohesiveness in this rebuilding. They're working together, not in isolation from one another. Every part is related to the other, not just doing their own thing without being in relationship to the other. And then chapter 4 brings us to a crisis point in the rebuilding of the wall. It's reported in verse 6 that so we rebuilt the wall until all of it reached half its height, for the people worked with all their heart. You see, up until this point, they had worked wholeheartedly and with energy. They too had caught something of the vision that God had given to Nehemiah, and they also were in touch with God's heart. But now as they reached the halfway point, things began to change. The energy and the excitement were beginning to waver. And the minds and the hearts began to wander from the task that was at hand. They'd started with lots of energy and excitement and enthusiasm. But by the time we get halfway through, it can become a drudgery, an effort to continue. It's the second half that's the tough half. It's the second half that you wonder how on earth we're going to make it through. For the first half, they rolled up their sleeves in the midst of the rubble that they'd been sitting in for 80 years. They were excited about the task that God had given them, and it seemed to be easy. But now they're halfway through. It was crisis time. But Nehemiah shows us how to persevere when things get difficult and when we face criticisms and opposition, both externally and internally, when we seek to follow God's plan. At the start of the chapter, he faces opposition and criticism from outside. They are being ridiculed. They're being mocked. They're being laughed at and then threatened with attack. Now, we have it mainly in subtle ways. Subject of jokes, public criticisms in the media or by those we work with and so on. And at times we may feel isolated. But most of us haven't really experienced the type of opposition that Nehemiah speaks of here. Nor the type of opposition that many of our brothers and sisters in Christ suffer in many other parts of the world today. However, this isn't his main problem. Verse 10 says that meanwhile the people in Judah said the strength of the laborers has given out. There's so much rubble that we cannot rebuild the wall. You see, similar to the time of Ezra, opposition from outside is not nearly as deadly as discouragement from within. The people are saying we can't keep it up, Nehemiah. Why? Because our strength is gone. We're too tired. And the people become demoralized. They start complaining, being critical, so that their enthusiasm wanes and they lose focus. Yet we read later on in verse 21 that they can again work from dawn until the stars come out. So what changed? Remember earlier when Nehemiah started this project, he came to them and he told them how God was with them, and he got their eyes focused upon God. And with their eyes focused on God, they were ready to tackle anything. Now, halfway through the project, they've taken their eyes off God and now looking at the rubble again. There's no more rubble in chapter 4 than there was in chapter 2. In fact, there's less. What has changed? It's not so much the rubble, but their focus. They don't have their eyes on God anymore. They have their eyes on the rubble. And as long as we have our eyes on the rubble, we will only become discouraged and become tired. And how often does that happen to us? We get so discouraged at times in what we're doing in ministry that we may just want to give up. And there are times where we may wonder whether it's worth it. And we can become overwhelmed with all the tasks that we seem to be doing, and we take our eyes off God. We find ourselves spending less time with God in prayer and devotion, and all we can see is rubble, problems and problems and problems. We start feeling tired, even in the mornings, our strength goes. We begin becoming negative, distracted from what God is calling us to do. See, Nehemiah had previously settled some things with God before this ministry started. And when he looked the situation over, Nehemiah had a heart that was in touch with God's heart. He knew first things first. And he then risked his life to be involved in this project because he believed that this was what God wanted him to do. And God gave him the time and the authority and the resources. So Nehemiah again quickly turns to God in prayer. And in verse 14, he reminds them all, don't be afraid of them. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome. This was his original prayer. And so he moves in the midst of the discouragement to get them to take their eyes off the rubble and put their eyes back on God. And what happens? Well, verse 16 tells us, after I looked things over, I stood up and I said to the nobles, the officials and the rest of the people, don't be afraid of them. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome, and fight for your families and your sons and your daughters and your wives and your homes. See, these people weren't tired just from physical exhaustion. They had renewed strength even though the work was more difficult for hours each day. And why? Because they had shifted their focus from the rubble back to the great and awesome God. And they resumed working together again. And it was a cooperative work. Working together in teams and with Nehemiah working alongside. Yet they had to make some changes to their strategies to guard against threats from outside, but they continued with the main purpose of rebuilding themselves as the people of God. Now, this wasn't the end of opposition. There was ongoing challenges that we read in later chapters, how they treated the poor and the disadvantaged amongst them in a very poor way. They had to stop and restore relationships. How there were threats to get distracted to do other things that weren't the main rebuilding. And while we make plans and develop ministry strategies, We do need to hold them loosely to changing circumstances. However, what aches my heart today is that there are so many Christians who make such a fine, enthusiastic start but don't seem to finish. Anyone can start, but we need to see it through and to finish. Right at the halfway point, this project nearly goes under. They've sat there for 80 years. They get a tremendous start, but soon the energy runs out and the rubble looms large and the focus shifts. And you've got the classical formula for throwing in the towel. And the only thing that kept them going was that they reshifted their focus away from the rubble and back on their awesome God. Friends, there's always going to be opposition. Opposition to the work of the Lord will exist in every generation. And we need to know this, because we can fall into the trap of thinking that we can wait to do the work when it's at an easier time. We think that maybe we should stop because there is opposition and discouragement. That maybe things will get a bit easier, so we'll just have to wait. But God is telling us an important truth. There will always be opposition to the work of God. And if we wait for the work to get easier, then it's never going to come. Jesus made the point to his disciples in John 15, 18. He says, if the world hates you, you know it's hated me before it hated you. And we shouldn't expect a different response from the world than the response that Jesus received. There were those who opposed him from outside, and there were those who sought to discourage him within. There will always be opposition at work. We cannot allow the opposition to stop us from doing the work. But we also need to recognize that opposition does not mean that God has abandoned us. You think here what God is doing at this moment of time. God wanted his temple built. We read in Ezra 1 that he moved the heart of Cyrus to make the decree to go to Jerusalem to build the temple. We also read in Ezra 1 that God moved the hearts of the people to go back to the work. In Nehemiah, God also moves in King Artaxerxes' heart. And the rise of the opposition does not mean that God isn't with his people. The rise of opposition does not mean that the people are wrong in doing the work or it ought to stop. We mustn't interpret opposition to the work to mean that we should cease. God is allowing, he doesn't cause them, but he's allowing these roadblocks to test our faith. In every generation, there is going to be times when we experience hidden resistance, discouraging opposition, governmental opposition, forceful opposition. And these are key tests of our faith to see whether we will continue on with the work of the Lord or not. We're going to get opposition and resistance from both inside and outside. So friends, do not lose sight. Do not lose sight of the goal and continue to exercise faith in our Lord. The goal of these people was to build the temple and the city wall so that God could be in a relationship with his people. But for a time, the people lost sight of the goal, and so the work stopped. Discouragement grabbed hold of them. We can never forget why we're here. We can never forget why God has called us to be and to do. People are going to discourage us or seek to discourage us directly or indirectly, knowingly or unknowingly. But God has called us to be his people here at CBC. Let me pray. Father, there are times when we may feel discouraged from the criticisms and the actions of others from outside. And sometimes, Father, because of internally, we've taken our focus away from you and upon the things around us. Father, help us to keep our focus on you. That all the challenges and the problems, the opposition, the resistance that might be around us, Father, that we would see it in the light of who you are, in the awesome God that you are. And help us, Father, to recognize that what resources, what you call us to do, Father, you have given us the resources to achieve what you call us to. Help us, Father, to continue to keep our hearts and minds focused upon yourself. Amen.